Hi there, this is Dan Delta Collins. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and also youtube.com/wanderingdms. We hope you enjoy the show.
DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan, and today on Wandering DMs, we're going to be talking about player versus character separation. Can you do it? Should you do it? How much should you do it? Who should you do it with?
Excellent. No, see, that's a good point, I think. It might be interesting to differentiate between your long ongoing campaign with your close personal friends versus playing a convention game with a bunch of strangers.
Oh, geez, here we go again. That's the whole issue I hadn't thought about. I'm not ready for that.
It's important. It's important.
Are you planning this mind blow just as we start every time?
Yes.
What? Oh, God.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's honestly, it's a bit of why it comes up for me as an interesting topic because, you know, if I could just play all the time with people that I super trust and really get along with well and I know are amazing role players, we don't have to talk about this stuff because it's just granted, right? Like, we didn't talk about this stuff prior to my birthday game, right?
Well, this is one of the things I was going to say is that, like this is not an issue that I have to deal with. And I'm fortunate enough to have really, really great players that mm-hmm. I don't even think about whether I trust them or not. And they all have great friends. And if they bring some extra guest, it's the same story. And it's not... So admittedly, this is not an issue that I've had to actually confront in a long time.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, fantastic. How did this come up?
It came out of my experience I had running my West Marches game at my company. So these are my coworkers. So I have some relationship with them and one that I'd really rather not spoil. But it's not like I handpicked them to join the game. In fact, it's a large group of them. I have something like 20 people in the group, and it's sort of a random roll of the dice each week, whenever, or each session of who's going to be there. And the worst part was that it's something, I foolishly didn't address it up front, never talked to them about it. Yeah. And I really need to do that en masse, right? I need to address all 20 of them and say, this is important. Let's all talk about this.
Yeah.
And then also, because it's a fairly time-constrained session, we do about three-hour sessions, and I'm trying to get people out of there so they can go home and maybe actually have dinner. As the session's ending, very quickly we're dealing with the stuff that's most loaded for player conflict. That's like experience points, treasure distribution, narrative wrap-up for, hey, we finished the job. The stuff that would bring potential player conflict to the table, we're doing in, the last 5 minutes of everybody, putting their books away and trying to get out of the door.
Okay.
So, I'll give you the specifics. So, I had, I've seen some conflicts arise, and again, I'm, trying to weigh, do I care, right? Is this even my job? Should I interfere or not? Should I just let the dice fall as they may?
Right.
He's generally, especially when we get to stuff like treasure distribution, I generally assume that is an in-game fiction event that the players have to figure out for themselves amongst each other, right? The characters have agreed to go on this mission together. Surely they talked about how they get paid, right? Although usually not, because really everyone shows up at the table going, I'm going to play D&D, not I'm going to enter in as a contractor into a team a team-based job, and I have to watch out for myself, right? So, to be clear, are you
saying that you're assuming that a reasonable split happens without talking about it, or are you assuming that the players need to fight that out at the end?
I think that it is really up to the players and their style and what they want out of the game. So some players will be highly cooperative and they will just assume a even split and it just sort of goes without saying and they just do it and you don't have to talk about it at all. Other players maybe don't want an even split, and they have a mechanism that they've already figured out amongst themselves. For example, my Sunday group, every time a magic item is found, they dice for it. They literally say, okay, who wants this item? Everybody roll off. High roll gets it.
Now, that's a slightly... Okay, so that's a slightly, like, older school group, am I right?
Yeah, okay. It's a mixed group.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's like a traditional thing that I would be surprised if, like, current players in their 20s would come up with that on their own.
Okay, let me give you an extreme. Then there's like, the crazy story-based problematic issue, right?
Okay.
One player who is playing a thief, right, or a rogue, as you will, in 5th edition, basically got a hook by interacting, like, they have in their background, it says that they know someone, they have underground connections, so they got a hook that said, hey, these shipments that are going up and down the river have been raided and stolen, I need you to recover them. One of the boxes has some innocuous-looking goods in it that are really, like, actually... you know, black market stuff. And so that one box, that's the important one. I need that back. So he goes out with his group. They have an adventure. They reclaim the stuff. They bring it back home. And then he says, great. And I take that one box back to my connection. And because he's, you know, done his legwork and he's the one who even, like, introduced the whole adventure and whatnot, like, I'm like, great, this he deserves a reward. And I'm like, okay, so you get this extra money for having done this. And then there's an argument about whether or not that money gets split up.
Gotcha.
And he's like, this is my thing. This is my personal thing with my personal connection. You're not there. Right?
Gotcha.
Why should I share this with you? Like, oh, we just saw you walk off with that box. Did the character see me walk off with the box? Oh, for crying out loud.
Right.
And I just didn't foresee it, right? So, and again, it's in a rushed end of game, last 5 minutes. I didn't foresee the conflict coming up. And didn't think to, like, set the stage, right?
The issue that of dealing with that at the end is clearly not unique to your workplace situation.
Sure.
And I think that that's, you know, that happens in conventions and it happens in home games. And, you know, when I play Friday nights, you know, technically there's no specific thing we need to get out for, but... we get done at the end of the 3 or 4 hours and we're at least all tired. And, you know, we've pushed ourselves to about some people's, like, limit of fatigue or something like that.
Right.
And it would be really uncomfortable to all of a sudden have this completely open-ended character dispute interaction happen. And I will say that, you know what, to be perfectly honest, and this is not traditional old school, I just put my foot on the throat of the whole issue. And I have actually just by fiat divided everything in even splits.
Right.
And just tell everybody, you get this much money after I do a division. And I have never asked the players what they want to do about that because I just wanted to not deal with this whole issue at the end of sessions.
Right. Right. I mean, granted, like, I like that he's inventing stuff about his character, and I like that he's, like, actually doing the legwork to set up adventures that helps the whole flow of the story. It helps the games happen. It's all great.
Yeah.
I just didn't foresee that he was going to roleplay the character in this way of, like, this is mine, right? Well,
right.
It makes logical sense when you think about it, but I just didn't foresee it. Yeah, so I just didn't foresee it.
Been talking about like thieves stealing from the party, like robbing something from the party.
Right.
And what your case there is a lot more gray zone of that's like
it really is problematic. But I was trying to give the broad spectrum of examples of how this comes up. Certainly I've played it just seems like a trope, right? That the thief opens up the treasure chest while other stuff's going on. Oh, you see this beautiful jewel dagger atop a bed of gold pieces. I pocket the dagger. Right?
I think that happened twice 24 hours ago for me with new players.
Right.
It worked out fine, but that's certainly the I'm a thief, I ought to be doing that.
Okay, so here's why it brings up separation of player and character. One, I think it's totally legitimate for you to want to play such a character. Two, I think you have to recognize that you are a person sitting around a table with your friends playing a game. And that you might piss them off to the point of they don't want to play with you anymore. And that's an undesirable outcome for you.
So stipulated, sir.
Right? Okay. So great. So how do you deal with that? And I think there are some really good ways to deal with it, honestly, by including the group in the play. By saying, like, you know, don't make a big secret out of it. Like, amongst the players, right? Make a big secret out of it amongst the characters. Haha, I hide this dagger. You know, and then maybe make a joke about it. All right, great. Oh, look, guys, look at all this gold that my character says with this big, obvious, pointy bulge sticking out of his pocket. Right? Or something, right? There's a way to include everyone into the fun of it without, you know, without just trying to, like, I have a secret thing on the side. Don't tell the other players, please. You know?
So you wrote a blog this past week that argued in this direction for clarifying what the split between players and characters of the as a player, I want to support the team in our group entertainment. As a character, I'm scurrilous rogue and maybe doing things that are you know, is like they's roguish.
Yep.
So I came through and recalled a blog post that I read maybe a year ago that I thought was really interesting by a gentleman named, that goes by Angry DM, if I recall. I don't know the gentleman's real name. And so who thank you for reading it and thank you for summarizing it. I think that's extremely helpful. Who argued the opposite of intentionally collapsing player and character. And using the metaphor that I actually really do like of the murky mirror, you know, and part of the argument being we don't have to have these discussions of what's player, what's character in video games when you're playing a video game or reading a comic book or playing a game of poker or all these other things. Why on earth in role-playing games do we even need to have this discussion? You know, clearly there's bleed between what you want as a player and what you want as a character. Let's just collapse that and assume that whatever you as a player say at the table, some analogous thing is happening in the real world at the same time, and just not even bother to have this whole discussion that we're talking about.
Right. I also,
of course,
sorry, go
that,
on.
That article, it has all kinds of F-bombs and four-letter words shot all through it. And I, you know what, I actually sympathize because I've done that myself in prior times, thinking that was cool and edgy. So, but I think the argument is weakened because of that. So you've got a summary that's very nice.
I ended up trying to boil it down to just a couple paragraphs to post on my own blog. Not to say that the original work isn't good. Like it's valuable. He's got a lot of extra points in there that I think are really, you know, you should go and read it. If you can get through.
Yeah.
If you can ignore the tone or the tone doesn't bother you, you find the tone funny, great, go for it, more power to you. I found it off-putting, and frankly, a little wordy, right? Like, the overall length of the post, like, it took me, like, there's definitely moments when I'm reading an article and I start to go, how much more of this is left? And I scroll to the bottom and go, oh,
you're looking
God!
At the scroll, you're looking at the scroll bar there of, like, what ratio have I gotten to at this point? Right. And his writing is consistent like that, and in fact, I think if I look at more recent stuff, he's gotten away from using asterisks. So now
it's just the swears, right?
Yes, right. He stopped using the asterisks, so he's even more committed to it. Anyway,
I don't mind the swears, but I just don't like the attitude of "I'm brilliant, the rest of you are idiots."
Yeah, and I thought that was. I've written things thinking that that was funny, and then I was like, I think this weekend's anyway.
Yeah.
So I think we both found it, like, at least an intriguing idea.
Yeah.
And I'll say that I think I can find some obvious things to shoot holes in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so for some of these examples are like, if I turn to my fellow player Alice and say, this orc chieftain's a jerk, I'm going to stab him in the back in 5 minutes, the DM should say, well, your character said something along the same line and he heard it and now he's going to, you know, defend himself.
Yep.
And I think I can find some obvious holes to shoot in that, like particularly if you're doing, you know, like as DM, I screw up sometimes, and sometimes I don't make the scene clear, or maybe I speak too fast, and a player has to say, "What did you just say?" or "What's on? What did you just say was on the table?"
Yeah.
And certainly those things ought to be immediately transparent, and you can't act like the player is, like the character is saying, "What's on that table?"
Right. I think the angry GM made some really great points here towards the end where he says, like, you don't have to be a jerk about it, right? Like, you can when you introduce this to your players, they're going to take some time to adapt, and you should maybe, like, say, like, you realize that by saying that to Alice, that you will have said that out loud. Are you sure you want to say out loud, I'm going to stab this person? And the player will probably be like, no, no, that was out of character. And then you remind them, there is no out of character in the Murky Mirror.
Right, right. I mean, and ideally, you're all training each other for your table etiquette in that regard, and hopefully those times will reduce, hopefully. Yeah. So let me make an argument about where I really like the collapsing. Mm-hmm. And having thought about it this week, I really like the collapsing, I think, on a really, like, on a low granularity level for time, specifically for time purposes. And so I think one thing that in the OSR that I do agree with, and I actually don't agree with a lot of stuff in the OSR, but one thing I do agree with is the challenge players, not characters principle.
Yes. Yeah.
As an old school guy, I like having puzzles and riddles and wordplay and anagrams.
Yep. Right. I mean, this is the same argument that leads me in the direction of saying I don't like skill systems. I especially don't like roles for social skills. You should talk to you role play you. I'll role play the person you're talking to. Am I lying? You have to figure it out.
That just happened yesterday. I got to say, one of our close friends who was DMing a game yesterday used those exact same words. Mm-hmm. With new players, and there was a moment where everybody was having to get used to what just happened.
Right.
It's so fascinating. I just got to see that thrown at somebody for the first time yesterday. It was great to experience that as a player.
Sorry, I threw your train of thought.
So I agree with you, and I want these puzzles that the players have to figure out and are not solved by an intelligence check or a history check or something like that.
Totally agree.
So in those, so there's at least the first hook that I don't want a distinction, and I don't want to have at that moment a debate about I know that, but would my character know that? And does I know about this. And like on strategic levels, I know that trolls, you need fire to fight trolls, but does my character know that? Are we going to debate? Are we going to talk backstory? Are we going to roll dice for it? And I'm just irritated by the whole slowdown in pace.
Yes. Yep.
At that point.
I totally agree with that. Yep.
So for me, like strategically, I'm like, anything you know about monsters in D&D, anything you know about strategy or spells in D&D, just come to the table and please use all that stuff to your advantage, knowing that me as DM or you, Paul, as DM, have a total right in your campaign world for anything to be working differently with this monster or today. That's totally on the table at the same time.
Yep.
And
I customize my monsters all the time. You think you knew what that was? Turns out you didn't.
Yep. And when I'm a player and someone in your game and someone turns to me and goes, what does this happen? And my response is always, well, normally it's like this, but Paul could have anything happening.
Yep.
So our first stab will probably be plan A and be real, real ready to pivot real fast when we find out that's not the case with this one.
Excellent. Perfect. That's perfect. I love that. Right. I've seen that lead to great roleplay moments. I mean, our friend BJ was in a campaign with me where I was running with a bunch of other players who are all pretty new to old school D&D, and he naturally took on this character of like the grizzled old veteran and just had a wonderful time roleplaying this sort of like, oh, look out, that stuff dripping from the ceiling, that's going to eat your armor, back away. And having the other players go, what? It's just goo. No. You don't understand, you whippersnapper.
That's the best.
Yeah, it was great.
BJ's so good at that. I've done the same thing, right? One of my favorite scenes in a game that your brother was running was somebody pulls aside a curtain and some worms drop on them. And they're like, okay, there's some worms. I'm like, have some fire!
quick, everyone light our best friend on fire.
Throw all the burning oil on that guy immediately, and everybody's like, what? But yeah, he was one round away from death if I hadn't done that.
Yep, that's great.
So back to player character collapsing. So for time purposes, I definitely do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if a player is taking a long time in combat, I do this business of giving them, of announcing a five count.
Yep.
I'm saying, I'm going to give you a five count, or I'm going to move on to the next person. In particular, I do that if you have two people, like, you know, discussing what a particular player should do as their round comes up.
Yep.
And with newer players, I'm more gentle about it. I go, I'm giving you a five count, five, four. And with more experienced players, I'm like, five, four, three, yep. two.
I use the same technique. Yep.
And I've also collapsed exploring time. And I think that's a little different, is I don't, like, keep check boxes of exploring time. I actually run exploring time on my actual watch.
Yep.
So, and I think I've seen you do something similar, is for me, I do a wandering monster check every 15 minutes on the clock, no matter what, on my watch.
Yeah.
And if the players are gabbing or not on task, I don't threaten them, and I don't do the roll random dice to make them anxious.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, okay, now it's 11:15, and here's the next wandering monster check.
I like that. I've never tried that, but I do like that. I use the same sort of technique for downtime between sessions. Whenever somebody says, how much time has passed since our last session? I say, exactly the number of days that has passed since our last session.
Right.
Likewise,
that's in the book. I'll say that's totally in the book in AD&D. Yeah. That's actually the literal rule, and I also do that.
If somebody asks me what time of year it is, I tell them exactly what time of year it is. Like, I look out the window. It's summer. It's midsummer.
Oh, that's interesting, because I'm actually off that.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't always work, because sometimes we end a session in the middle of exploring a dungeon. So, like, really, the time that passed is zero.
Well, and now, on the other hand, if I'm doing a wilderness adventure and they just chewed up, like, a month because they got lost a whole bunch of times, then I actually run faster than real time than I do.
Yeah. So I've definitely done both of those myself as well. Yeah. But generally, like, if I don't have an answer, then I just use the real world.
Right. So I like I think as an old schooler where, you know, people go, my characters, like people who ran White Box when it first came out, they'll say, I didn't even think about giving my character a personality.
Yep.
And my first four characters are all named Fred 1, Fred 2, Fred 3, and Fred 4. Or some people say they didn't even give them names unless they hit second level or something like that.
Right, because they were just your troops. They were. It's like, did you name every model in your Warhammer Fantasy battle? No.
Right. I didn't.
yeah.
Precisely. And so, you know, so it really is, you know, so in those types of games, the character really is just a like a marker for the player's representation there. But to other issues like you're bringing up, it does start to break down with the, you know, thief on the fly. So I guess some old schoolers would say, great. Thief doing something scurrilous, just kill him.
Yep. I got that very response from someone on Facebook. Like, a very reasonable response is to immediately kill the thief. And like, okay, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, now we're both using I'm just playing my character as an excuse to hide behind for, like, really bad antisocial behavior,
right,
amongst our players. And ultimately what that leads to is two people in the real world, which has nothing to do with the game, two people in the real world who are now pissed off at each other, and probably someone's going to storm out. Or at least somebody's going to say, I'll never play with so-and-so again. And I've experienced that. I've dealt with that in my own group, and that's nonsense. I don't want to deal with that.
And let me say this, right? So to counter Mr. Angry DM, that admittedly, that's not unique to role-playing.
True.
Right? Okay, so I've had bad interactions with card games and playing poker where, you know, maybe someone wasn't thrilled to discover in a game of poker how great Bob is at bluffing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think when some of my friends really got into poker in the early 2000s, there was this awkward, we're discovering how good all of our friends are at lying to us.
Yep.
Moment that we had to parse.
I would point out there's a major difference in all the other types of games that you're listing here, which is that they're all competitive. Our goal is to beat each other, right? Like what about... the problem is really, like, cooperative board gaming is really kind of a new conceit, to be honest. There's not a lot of historical cooperative board. There's a lot out in the market now, a lot of great ones, but I still feel like they probably all came out within the last 10 years.
I will, good point, on the competition angle, even so with those board games or whatever, there can be a difference of opinion about how competitive you're expected to be.
True.
And actually, for what it's worth, Malcolm Gladwell had an article a couple of years ago about this issue, about certain social standards that when people breach them, people being really irritated about it in some kind of competitive situation. So, like, I've had a huge argument in a game of Mousetrap once.
I mean, we have a term for this, right? It's good sportsmanship, right? It totally exists. And then there are the counterexamples, and we can all talk about, like, McEnroe's behavior on the court and how crazy that was, right? Like, everybody reacted to that.
I think in the other direction, like, I've been in a situation where I've just been, like, everybody at the table, here are the rules, and I've had certain people being, but we're just here for entertainment, screw the rules. Right? We're playing Mousetrap, I want her to have a good time, just let her travel as far as she wants. And we're all adults, I'm not saying anybody here is a kid. So
here's the thing, and a couple of, gotta unwind this a little bit, we're in so deep. My friend Colleen, I think, had a wonderful analogy of relating playing D&D to being like being in an improv group. Right. When you're in an improv comedy group, you're kind of doing two different actions at the same time. One is you're playing your character. You are a specific person in a specific scene. You have to ground yourself in their motivations. You have to think like that person. And that's a very greedy behavior, right? Because you have to block out all the stuff that's going on and just think about, what does this person know? How would they react to blah? Portray that. Great. On the other hand, everyone in an improv troupe, ultimately the major goal is to collectively tell one joke. We as a group are all going to try and craft one joke, and it had better be funny. And that is a very cooperative, very, you need a lot of trust. You need to work together really well. And you can't lose sight of that goal and that angle when you're portraying your character.
That's a great, well-stated observation. And interestingly, about half of my players here in New York do improv. Mm-hmm. And I had to ask them about that exact issue once. I actually had I pulled one of them aside and said, when you're on stage doing improv, you know, are you targeting as a group the joke? And obviously the answer is yes. Yep. But I was really curious about that not long ago, and I had to ask about that.
I'll just give a quick shout out. There's a woman named Karen Twelves who wrote a book called Improv for Gamers. Specifically, it's a list of improv comedy exercises that she encourages you to do with your game group. She runs this at conventions, from what I understand, where she'll actually go at the beginning of a convention and run these workshops of improv exercises with the claim that it will improve your gaming. I think it's fantastic.
Cool. Yeah, that seems unbelievable. I think I need to read that book. That sounds really believable. And you know what? Counter that, actually, I was just talking to a friend yesterday coming home, and counter that, I was like, wouldn't it be interesting to see an improv group that had like a random number generator as an objective? Like if someone, what is the phrasing, makes an offer and then have some actual objective random number generator that says no. That is not happening in this reality. Go do something else.
I mean, isn't suggestion from the audience basically your random number generator in improv?
Well, yeah, but that just happens once at the outset. So it'd be interesting, like halfway through a scene, to be bam, nope, that's something
I'm pretty sure I've seen one on what's the TV show that really Whose Line Is It Anyway? Where the gist is one of the actors is given. Or all the actors are given little strips of paper with one line on it, and throughout the course of the improv, they have to pull that out and work that line in.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that. That's great.
That game never really worked super well for me.
No.
Yeah, I was always like, it was always. Here's the problem: is they would always do it as a quote. They would every time the solution was always, I heard the following from a third party. Blam.
Yeah.
And so they were always couching it as a quote from somebody else, which I thought was.
You're right. Okay, so we've gone down a rat hole here. So gaming is like improv. So this is where I get into like why I want some separation. Yeah. I'm fine with the tactical moments that once we're at the table, murky mirror. I think that's great. But
I want
everyone to be aware of the duality. Like, even the fact that we talk about the murky mirror makes us aware that there is a duality, right? And that there are contrary pulls on each of us. So by saying that there is no separation, we've acknowledged there's a separation, which is weird. But okay.
Let it go by for now. Let me come back to that.
Okay. I think that's brilliant. I think it's brilliant. So I think, like, the major technique I'm aware of to deal with these problems is upfront declaration of, of intent. Like, this is how we're going to play, guys. I want to bring up one other example. There's a game called Fall of Magic. It's a indie story game. Very loosey-goosey, touchy-feely kind of game where there's, like, almost no mechanics, almost no dice, etc., etc. Interesting thing about this game is the booklet at the very beginning says, here are four sort of major precepts of story gaming, four paragraphs, and you're instructed by the rulebook to actually pass this rulebook around and have one person read each paragraph out loud. Like, that's how you start the game, is we read this same rote chunk of text to each other and acknowledge it. And I'm just going to read you the first one because it's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's like a conversation. A good game session should give you that feeling of excitement and connection like a good conversation, and all those same rules about being a good conversationalist apply. Listen, ask questions, bear witness to the things that inspire your fellow players, and let us know what inspires you.
That's interesting.
Real quick, whether you agree with that specific statement or not, I find it fascinating that the rules of the game are, step one, let's all read this thing out loud and acknowledge this is how we're going to play.
Yeah.
I think that's fascinating.
You know, as a middle-aged, straight, cisgender, white guy, it's interfacing with younger players and also reading what older players, the people who played with Gygax and Arneson, what their cultural traditions are, it's interesting to see this transition of wanting to set those expectations up front come in, because there is this I think this old white guy culture of, we have so many shared expectations and so many shared experiences that we just all know that we're on the same page about almost everything. We don't need to discuss any of that stuff. We're not going to. And if you try to discuss it, we're immediately going to get cranky and irritated about spending that time.
Yep.
And so these things coming in, even I have had to go, well, to me, that's a new movement.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really good. And I just have to give a thumbs up to it. And I'll say one of the things that, like, I've discovered just in the last couple months was at an Adventures League game at TotalCon, having an X card on the table.
Yep.
I think that's what they called it, right?
I've used X card.
If anybody's uncomfortable with anything, here's a card on the table. You hold it up, and that tells us all you're uncomfortable, and we're just going to agree to just move the scene past whatever's happening.
Yep.
I think that you verbally, like when we played at your house last, you verbally kind of suggested the same thing.
It's in fact, yeah. I've used X card in games I've run. I typically use it more in, like, say, Cthulhu, where likely the game is going to orient us towards conflict, right? Like and possibly we're going to have dark, scary, upsetting themes.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is, and I think I picked up X card. There's a convention up in Toronto. I already can't remember its name, but, like, one of the interesting things about it is they're like, all games are X card. Like, it's just upfront part of the convention. All games.
Okay. Yeah.
If you read the text of the X card system, as it were, it'll point out itself, like, the most valuable thing about the X card is talking about the X card before you start playing. Like, acknowledging it, and acknowledging that we all agree that, like, we're trying to have fun together and we don't want anyone to be uncomfortable is, in fact, the most valuable part.
Yeah. And so, like, in my the game that I the last Friday game that I had. So when I play when I run D&D, and you know, historically I hate horror movies and I've avoided them, mm-hmm. but apparently when I run D&D, all my games turn into horror stories, like every single time, yeah. inevitably. And I don't realize it, because I say, like, here's just a factual description of something, and everyone at the table goes, oh my god, no, that's oh jeez, that's awful. Right, I'm like, that was not intended as any creative.
That's funny.
I thought that was just a clinical description of what would happen with that. And like in the last game, there was an undead temple area that was probably about the most awful thing that my players have run into. And afterwards, I was like, I wonder if now I'm going too far with the Ghibli bits.
You know, go. I'd suggest go read some James Raggy. Read some modules written for Lamentations of the Flame Princess, and you realize that you are a 3 on the scale, on the 1 to 10 okay. scale of how gruesome Good. It can get.
Right. Some people would really not... I think there's a lot of people nowadays that would really not want to use him as a metric for a lot, for almost anything.
I personally love his stuff.
But it made me think about it, because I don't, you know, maybe I should have that. That is not a discussion I've had with my table.
Yeah.
I really don't know where their boundaries are, honestly. And so, and I was immediately started thinking about the X card. Maybe I should have that conversation, check in, maybe actually have a card. And then I was thinking maybe I could do what you do and just verbally mention it. And my partner, Isabel, said, I really like the idea of a physical card.
Yeah.
Maybe someone gets sufficiently upset that they can't verbalize it.
Yep.
And that they can, that the physical card allows them to not actually have to make a coherent statement about it.
My spiel on the X card, and usually it's just an index card. I just take an index card and with a black Sharpie, draw a big X on it. And I say, here it is, putting it on the table. Yep. Here's the deal. And then I tell people, you can invoke the X card in the following ways. Touch the X card, point at the X card, lift the X card up, just say the word X card. All of these are acceptable ways to invoke the X card.
That's great. So to bring us back to our alleged topic.
Yeah. Separation of character and player. We're so far off. Okay.
Character and player. Like granted that we're going to use some amount of murky mirrorism.
Yeah.
Is using the X card reflected in game?
Oh, that's fascinating. I don't think so. I feel like the X card is so strongly just a game mechanic that it's like, that's like saying, is the roll for initiative? Well, I mean, I guess that's who goes faster. It's still kind of reflected in the game. Oh, can I come up with another metaphor of something that is a pure gamism? You know, how we pay for the pizza? I don't know. Right? Like, I feel like the X card is a way we, again, it's that point of, let me go back to my other example, right? So,
I mean, I think that like literally the scene didn't happen, right? Yeah. I mean, so literally we're admitting that there's some stuff that happened in game that we as players aren't gonna interact with. So I think that's
in my blog post when I first proposed the problem of like how to play a greedy player without or how to play a greedy character without being a greedy player.
Right.
My ultimate fallback is step completely out of game, and I don't like that. Honestly, I don't like that. I wouldn't jump to that solution first. I think, is a last resort. A last resort of, like, I'm playing my greedy character because, haha, I'm a thief, and I'm looking around the table and going, oh, those people are actually mad at me, right? These people sitting around, they're sitting there, look, I can read from their body language that they're mad at me, and I don't want that, but I want to play the character this way. Then the best thing for me to do that at that point is completely step out of character and say, hey, guys, just, you know, I like playing this jerk of a character, but I don't want to piss you off as my friends. So how do we move past that? Like, do you just want to narrate? Like we could just step back and we narrate and you'd say, you guys beat up my character and take your fair share of stuff and he's grumpy about that and we move on. And I'm fine with that. I'm okay because I'm not going to be pissed off if you beat the shit out of my character. That's okay by me. In fact, I think that's funny.
Have you seen that actually happen?
Get to that point of it?
Yeah.
I've seen get to the point where I wish it happened, but I've not seen anyone actually do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So, yeah. So an interesting theory at the moment.
So the problem is this all the, and one of my commenters brought up this wonderful point of like, I have a problem that I do have a greedy player, right? The my post unfortunately assumes that like, You are a mature player who is interested in everybody at the table having fun. You're not a greedy player, and you just want to portray a greedy character. What if you are a greedy player, or what if you are playing with a greedy player? How do you deal with that?
Yeah.
And that's probably more likely the situation you're in, to be honest, and I'm not sure what the answer to that is, honestly.
Yeah.
I've definitely played with that player who's, like, very interested in their own character, very interested in the game world, doesn't give a rat's ass about anybody else at the table apart from what they can get him. And I don't know. I mean, the short answer is stop inviting that person.
Easy to say, hard to do.
Yeah, right.
Super easy for a third party to say, disinvite that player. Yep. But you're in a social situation. You have a community. You have multiple other social contacts, and that's not that's much harder to do than it is for us to just say.
I mean, and then never mind the fact that maybe you're running a convention game for strangers. You have no choice. These are the people who showed up.
Yep. Great point.
So that's a whole other topic, and actually something I'm still stewing on. I kind of want to write a part two of that blog post of, like, how as a DM to deal with a greedy player. I don't think I have answers yet, so I'm trying to figure that out.
I think that's honest. I think that's honest, and, you know, all the writing I see online is, you know, is somewhere between have a conversation, disinvite them if you need to.
Yep.
And then, of course, you know, we've got this from Gygax in AD&D of, like, hit him with lightning bolts. Right? Just, hit with arbitrary lightning bolts from nowhere.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
a thermal lesson. And that's fucking bullshit. I mean, I just, right, that is not going to work any. No, that never worked. Who the hell ever thought that would work? That's ridiculous. But anyway, it's apparently someone had it on a menu at some point.
I am going to. So I've written up those couple of paragraphs of text of here's what Murky Mirror is. I do intend to try and bring that to my West Marches group and show them that text and say, I'm going to start doing this. Is everyone cool with that? I'm not expecting anybody to say no, but more so just being upfront about, like, we agree this is how we're going to play.
Right.
And maybe that helps. Like, I'm hoping at least that helps then when somebody is portraying greediness or whatever, or if we have a greedy player at the table, that, like, really the only possible way to interpret that is that they're a greedy player, right? And then you can have an actual, like, hey dude, you're making the game less fun for everyone. Maybe knock that off. Maybe, you know, or maybe you're gonna find that people don't want to play with you anymore.
I must admit, right, so when I'm a player and there's another player character who goes rogue, and is doing skullduggery and is, you know, taking stuff and do it. When I'm in town, I secretly meet with somebody else that they don't know. I, as a player, get really uncomfortable and almost embarrassingly uncomfortable. And a large part of it is that the obvious solution of, like, in person, I would reject that person. And, like, in a medieval setting, probably attack them and cut their hands off or something like that. And so I have to put in, as a player, I now have to put in a lot of work to find excuses why I'm not doing that. And I actually never do it well enough that I believe it on my own part. So I actually can never suspend my own disbelief with the ridiculous stuff I'm having to come up with about, like, oh, I just happened to turn my head at that moment and I wasn't looking and I didn't hear that and I'm confused when... I agree with the commenter on your blog. The most obvious thing to me is I think I actually would want to attack that person.
Yep.
That would be bad for the game, and now I'm having to do a whole lot of labor that I don't actually believe in.
Yeah. You know, it would be bad for the game, I think, again, assuming that you're not on the same page with that person. You don't have that trust. Right?
Yeah.
It's about building that trust. There's another...
So to summarize, like, I am a lot more comfortable with games where that's just taken off the table entirely.
Gotcha. I guess you could do that, but that forces you to play a certain style of game, I think, right? That forces you, like, that works for D&D, and this is a point I was going to get at before of, like, at least D&D, the trope is we are playing a group of adventurers who are, like, a weird mercenary group, band of brothers type, who are going out to, like, make a buck or make it rich or make the world better or whatever it is, but still... We're a group of friends who are cooperating, is the fiction, right?
Right.
On the other hand, I run a fair number of Cthulhu games where, like, I've run a Cthulhu game where the starting pre-gen characters are, one person is a criminal in handcuffs locked up in the back of a police car, and the other person is the FBI agent who has arrested this person and is trying to get them to prison. Like, they are set up to have conflict from the get-go. Right? The whole point of the game is to enjoy exploring that conflict with each other.
That's a good point, and I don't play a lot of horror games like that, and I have blinders on for that. You're right.
Those games can be a lot of fun if there's trust, right? And if people know how to play that type of game. And I think a big part of it is just setting the expectations up front. Like I said, like doing like the Fall of Magic does with a blob of text at the beginning or something that just makes it clear to everyone, this is how we expect to play. I don't know.
I think partly because, you know, partly me actually DM fiating the treasure split kind of stamps down on that a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I just take the whole how much treasure just out of the player's hands entirely, really. So that there's almost no incentive for a thief character to do anything different.
Right.
But it's a super good point about it has to that assumes a team treasure acquisition exercise, which is not all games.
Right. Let me bring up one other. I'm going to steal one other metaphor from my good friend Colleen because she's brilliant. And this can come up equally. I think in it's not necessarily like I'm playing the greedy rogue, but like she has a character type that she calls weirdo in a tree. I'm a weirdo in a tree. And the idea is I have spent a lot of time coming up with a very interesting and convoluted backstory for my character. I have a sordid past with, like, strange, upsetting things, and it's very interesting and elaborate. And I am going to withhold all that from the game until somebody draws it out of me. And it's that last bit that's really a problem, right? I'm a weirdo in a tree. I'm not going to talk to you about how weird I am unless you come climb up the tree and talk to me about it.
Yeah.
No one's going to do that. No,
right.
Your character, you're going to play the whole game, and your interesting backstory is never going to come up. You'll be the only one who enjoyed it. If that, you're probably actually kind of dissatisfied because it didn't come up.
Right.
So again,
go Immanuel Kant on that, like, what if everybody does that?
Right. Yeah, that's right. Terrible.
And literally nothing happens.
That's why I think some acknowledgement of separation of player and character is super important there, because I can say, yes, my character is a weirdo in a tree. Then as a player, I'm going to find every excuse I possibly can to out their secrets, right? Characters with secrets are only fun if the secrets come out. So as a player, it's your job to make the secrets come out, even though your character might be pissed.
Yeah.
And that's that sort of like, partly you're playing your character in their own things, but partly also you're a co-writer of this shared narrative, and you have to work with the others to make the final end result of the story we tell together enjoyable.
I feel like we went through a similar process. Like at least my feeling was we went through a similar process back when we had a group playing third edition.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there was an early time when there was a lot of effort being put into how does my character conflict with the other characters at the table? And then at some point there was a realization for me that I actually really had to labor to support the team. And maybe in D&D that's a flatter, there's more closeness between player and character, and maybe for some other games that separation is more stark. I kind of remember learning the effort that I had to put in as a player to support the team
I certainly recall in our early games I was used to that style of play coming out of college where I would write paragraphs of backstory about my character. I would come up with all this stuff and be prepared to have conflicts and blah blah blah. I don't know, that's okay, I guess, if everyone's on the same page and has the same expectations. But I feel like one major thing I learned from playing with you, Dan, is that it opened my eyes to this a different style of play wherein I don't have any preconceived notions about my character, and through play they will shape my character. Right, that I will discover the character along with everyone else just by playing the game. And that, I think, is really an interesting way to play. And it's a different way to play. I kind of like it because I've heard that the style I was used to sometimes called playing before you play. And, one of the frustrations I had with playing that character way back when was that, like, all the good juicy stuff happened already before we even session one. It was already in the text that I had written.
Right.
So why bother playing this character? They're done already.
Right. Totally. And then you don't get an arc. You're stuck in with this initial stamp, and you don't get any arc that really had anything to do with it half the time.
Yeah. I mean, so I've been watching a bunch of Critical Role, and they're certainly playing in that other style where they have a lot of stuff, but they've agreed. They clearly are in agreement that, like, our characters have interesting secrets, and we're going to draw it out of each other, and we're going to find excuses to share it with each other.
Okay.
To the point where they, like, they often spend a lot of time role-playing sitting up on watch at night. It's pretty funny. It's pretty funny, but there's, like, a conceit in that show of, like, okay, who's on watch together? Us two. Okay, now we're going to have our fireside chat.
Really?
Now we're going to role-play for 20 minutes what our watch is like, which is not interrupted by monsters or attacks or anything. It's just the two, these two random strangers stuck together in front of a fire for 3 hours. What do they talk about? Yeah.
That is really interesting.
It's fascinating. Really,
yeah.
And you can tell that the players are working hard to out their own character secrets.
Okay.
In a satisfying way, like not just like, blah, here's everything. Right. But in a like sort of make a nice satisfying arc. So you feel like a story happens.
I was playing yesterday, right? And somebody, and it was a fifth edition game. So I actually do, on my sheet, I actually do have flaw, personality, motivation, stuff like that. And, you know, someone got mind reading powers for a second. And they're like, they pointed at me like, what's your secret? And I'm like, I just handed him my character sheet. I just read it.
here's my secrets.
So it was a much more cursory. If I'm curt, I apologize. But he just read my mind. I'm like, all right, here's my secrets. There you go.
Great, it's great.
So I didn't think to make that a 20 minute long interaction.
I don't think it has to be. Why was I bringing that up? I think just, again, to get back to our theme of character versus player separation. The character is never going to think of the holistic enjoyment of story arcs and is everyone at the table having fun. Like, that doesn't make any sense. You have to think of that as a player. So I don't know. I like at least having that expectation that to some degree...
Finish your thought.
Just that we acknowledge up front, even if it doesn't come up in tactical moment-by-moment play, but we acknowledge up front that we're a group of friends playing a game together, and we're hoping for this kind of outcome.
I feel like maybe there's, like, this continuum of, like, for really, really small-grained things, like, where do you move in this combat this round, in this 10-second period, and what do you say in this particular location, that works pretty nicely to have player character collapsed. And then as you get to larger and larger scale issues, like overall story arc, what happened this month, what happened between sessions, that kind of requires maybe more advanced discussion about what our expectation is separate from what our characters are doing. So maybe there's like a small scale to large scale correlation there or something like that.
It's a good theory, I think. I'm not seeing any holes in it.
Yeah, it seems like you can't be an ideologue on either side of that. You can't say there's no separation, and I don't think you can say there's total separation either, particularly for examples like small scale combat and stuff like that. So maybe there's a scaling issue there.
Yeah,
I don't know what most of my blog tends to be about. So that's what I go through.
I think that the biggest value of the X card being talking about the X card up front. I feel like the biggest value of acknowledging, the biggest value of talking about that there's a difference between player and character is talking about it up front, even if you then say, and we're going to play Murky Mirror and pretend there is no separation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love that. So anyway, I'm going to try that. I'll tell you how it goes. I may piss off some of my players.
And in your West Marches game.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I have that text that I posted to my blog, and I think on Monday I'm going to send that to all those players and say, I'm going to implement this going forward.
Would you try that in your weekend game that you play with the other...
That's a different group. Would I try that with them? I think that they already get it, honestly. I think they already get it, and I don't have to.
Yeah. I think that's close to the expectation of old school gamers.
Yeah. I mean, that group, they will occasionally, like, right in the middle, of, and at surprising times to me, like, discuss the local sports game. Like, we're going to just stop playing for 15 minutes and discuss sports.
Okay.
And as not a sports fan, it always takes me aback, and I'm like, I guess I'm taking a break.
Right.
I'm surprised. And they just roll with it, and they just go, and it's fine, and it doesn't affect the game adversely, except for the fact that the couple of us who aren't interested in sports go, break time.
Yeah, understood. Interesting. I know at least one individual who played with Gygax and Arneson who supposedly would complain bitterly about the idea, but I don't know if that gentleman would have more taste for sports versus young whippersnappers on their phones, or if he's biased in some way on that. But I've seen some old schoolers supposedly would complain, how dare you focus on anything other than mapping the dungeon while you're at the table. Like, moral turpitude. So that's interesting to hear. I would not have expected that, actually.
All right, shall we wrap this up?
I think we hashed the hell out of that
Excellent.
One.
Excellent, great. Any final thoughts on separation of player versus character?
I don't think you can be an ideologue about that. I think in some cases, closing the gap makes parts of the game work better. But you can't pretend that there's no difference at all.
Yeah. Awesome. If any of you, dear viewers, have other opinions or other techniques you've tried in the wide range of there is no separation to we talk about all our characters in the third person constantly or whatever, let us know. I'd love to hear about how you've encountered it and what problems it has caused or solved. So leave us some comments, and maybe there'll be a part two of this conversation.
Definitely. I think Paul and I are both still working on this issue. So as we continue to work on this process, that for me has only been 30 or 40 years, or I lose count now, hopefully we can get better with your comments. So we'll look forward to that. And you can follow us on, remember, you can follow us on YouTube and Twitter and Twitch now by the handle WanderingDMs on all three of those platforms. We are now live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. So please come back next week and join us for another thought-provoking discussion, and we will talk to you next week.
See you then.